But on the right, is it recording under chat?
It's actually recorded under chat.
So can you just press it?
No, it doesn't work. Okay, it does. There it does. But now where'd everybody go?
And
it's been for 8 minutes so far.
Okay, perfect. So now what you gotta do is just press participants and you're fine.
Okay, fine. So I guess you'll delete this part. Okay, nothing happened. Oh, there I am. Okay, good. Okay. Okay? Sorry for the delay, ladies. I think it's just my day started off as one of those days. As soon as my kids woke me up and said, "Mom, there's snow on the ground," I knew it was going to be a long day. Well, the snow is gone for now. I think it made it till about lunchtime. Probably not too much after. I think at lunchtime it was over. But now it's a little bit icy. But I think that's not bad for Canada. November 24th with our first sticky snow. That's pretty good. And my kids are coming in tomorrow night, so I hope that they do okay with the drive and water sounds okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's begin. My apologies, though, I'm not sure which sheet. I know that the correct sentence went in. 4B is called inner conflict, but there are a few... Okay. I think you need to mute your mic. Thank you. Okay, so basically, before we begin tonight's chair, I would like to ask you to please make a few corrections on your sheet, if you printed out or if I gave it out, because I'm not sure. It was one of those days. So basically, I think I printed the wrong sheet. So the topic of the sheet, inner conflict, is correct. Source number 3. The correct source should say Sifrei Chachamim, Devarim 6:5. It says Sefarno. We're going to cross out Sefarno and call it Sifrei Chachamim. And then the last dotted source, it says Sefer Milos Hamidos. It's called Ma'alas Yeser HaTov. So cross out the last word Hamidos and it's Yeser HaTov. And then in addition on the bottom for the fourth, I guess, airplane source you would call it, is Majesty of Man. And the rest of the information on Majesty of Man can be found on your other sheets if you want the full correct version of how it's written with the authors, etc. Okay, I'm going to attempt to make a correction and resubmit it so that you have the correct version. But in the meantime, I apologize for those errors. Somehow it slipped by and I didn't notice it until I printed it off and came home. Okay, all the excuses aside, now let's begin. Okay, so tonight's class is a continuation of last time in some way, in that we had started to discuss Shema, and we were discussing Pasuk Hey, where we talked about loving Hashem, and we discussed last time how it is to love Hashem, what that means to love Hashem, and how to make Hashem be loved by others. We continue in that Pasuk, we continue in that verse with the words Yechol Levavcha, with all of your heart. And if we look actually at the spelling of the word Levavcha, it really, if you look, say the word, it should really be Libcha. Libcha, Levcha, your heart. And it says Levavcha with two vases. So that's actually the Sifrei Chachamim that we corrected over here on our sheet for Sifrei Chachamim over there, which should actually be Nun. So it should actually say Sifrei Chachamim Nun. Is the full correction there, and it says L'charet Lama Kisiv Levavcha B'Shnei Bezin. So Sifrei Chachamim is telling us that Rashi is going to ask, why is the word heart written with the letter Bez two times? It should really have only been one in order to be accurate. So Rashi tells us that there's two Bezes, and he gives two answers. Answer number one, B'Shnei Yitzracha, with your two yeters, with your yeter hara, your evil inclination, and your yeter hatov, your good inclination. Davar acher, another answer, dechol levavcha, for the meaning or the translation of explanation of why levavcha has two bases. Shelo yehiyeh livcha cholok al hamakom, that your heart should not be divided against Hashem, that you shouldn't be iffy. In your service Hashem, you should be balanced, you should be whole. So that's what we're going to spin off tonight, because we're already talking about the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, and the Yetzer Hashov, the evil inclination, and that is what we have within us. You have this inner conflict within us. You have positive powers and negative powers that are vying for our attention and for our behavior. So we're going to see how that translates to ourselves and how we can act upon it. So one of the terms that I like to use is a sefer called Sarei Aaron. Sarei Aaron, I think you've mentioned, it goes through every single verse of the Chumash, and then on every single verse, he writes down like a whole list of a paraphrasing of all the different mefarshim on it. Not every single one, mostly the ones that are on the Mikros Gedolah, plus others. And sometimes he quotes them, and some of them are his own thoughts. The Sarei Aaron, the composer of this author, it's his own thoughts. So what does he say? He has two interesting things that I decided to share with you tonight. So number one, Shalom Yahar Aharei Nidosav Yisbalach. That you shouldn't be thinking and you shouldn't be contemplating about how Hashem runs things. Zahainu, She'ein Libo Soleimimo, Ela Noter Lekan Ulekan Kemitsupak. Because if we're trying to understand and we're trying to rationalize the things that Hashem does, then my heart is not complete. I'm thinking. I'm misupak. I'm undecided. I'm not clear. I have hesitations. She's telling us, don't have any hesitations regarding the actions of Hashem. The nimsa ki'ilu levavo chavo l'shnayim. Because then it looks like your heart is divided in two. Right? Like, my girls and my students in my class, they have these little necklaces. It's a heart, and it has like a zigzag, and then one girl in the class has the word best, and the other girl in the class has friends. So you shouldn't have like two hearts that are torn apart. I actually saw a nice one said mother, daughter. That one I wanted to get. That one was really sweet. So you shouldn't have like two hearts that are separated because you're confused and you're not sure. Ela te'ehov et Hashem. Rather, you should love Hashem, as we talked about last time at the beginning of the process, the first verse of Shema, of loving Hashem. Bechol levacha, with your whole heart. Shalom to Yugo Makom Leherhor Seini. You should have a complete heart. It should be one thought process and not to be thinking two ways. Another explanation that he gives is that Sheyeha Hakel Yisbara Afilo Besas Avro Avira. Now this is very interesting because it's something that happens and we might feel bad about it, but here the Sarei Aaron is actually giving us encouragement about it. He's telling us that even in the midst of us doing something which is not so right, which is wrong, we should still love Hashem during the time when we're doing something wrong that we know it's wrong. How could that be? Well, how do you explain that? Right? We know we're doing something wrong. Right? I should have made a bracha and I didn't, and I'm eating this sandwich and I didn't make a bracha, I didn't wash, whatever it is, I know. So like, my instinct tells me to feel guilty. I have a conscience about it, then I'm doing something that I'm not supposed to be doing, and if I'm feeling guilty about it, then I'm not really loving Hashem completely because I'm feeling that there's a disconnect because maybe he's not happy with me because I'm not doing something that I'm supposed to be doing. But the Sarei Aaron says, no. Klomar, meaning to say, Kishagover Alav Yitro La'avor Avela. Let's say we do have that Yetzer Hara. And that Yetzer Hara gets stronger than us. It's a battle. He does try to get us to do wrong, and sometimes we succumb. We're natural, we're human, we make mistakes. Oh, kofes alav haka'as. Or maybe sometimes we get this anger burning inside of us. Verotel lahazik lechaveiro, and it causes us to want to hurt somebody because we're upset. What should we do at that time? Just at that time when we're about to make that mistake? Yisar ava hakel v'avodaso. We should think about how much Hashem loves us and how much we love Him at that time. And what we're actually going to see is that, according to Rav Shlom, in the book of Rav Shlom on prayer, he's connected, he has a similar thought. He tells us that the Yetzer Hara has an agenda. The Yetzer Hara has a plan for us. His daily schedule is filled with trying to get us to do the opposite of what Hashem wants. He knows that we have a list of things that Hashem wants us to do, and on the converse, the opposite is what Hashem doesn't want us to do. So the Yetzer Hara's God is to try to get us to do the things on the no list. Now what happens? if we think about it, it's actually something that's very fascinating. Because what happens? This Yetzirah could get stronger than us. We could listen to him, and we can make that mistake. But what we have to understand, and we find the two thoughts together, and Rav Shach tells us we shouldn't feel bad. Don't feel bad about that inclination. We should try to do the right thing, for sure. But don't feel bad about it. Don't feel guilty, and don't be ashamed. Because if we have a conscience inside of us, and the Yetzirah is trying to convince us to do something, that's how we were created. We were born with that Yetzirah. There's nothing that we could do about that. However, if that Yetzirah is trying to work on us and pound on us and get us to do something wrong, and I win over him, and I say, no, I'm not going to listen to you, you're telling me the wrong thing, and we overpower him, then that's beautiful. And that makes us into a stronger and into a better person. And the more desire we have to do something, that we control ourselves from doing, the greater we become for it. So each time we have that confrontation with the Yetzirah, instead of pushing us down, we can use that as a way to push ourselves up. And Rav Shach tells us, and he quotes from other places, that the Yetzirah is sitting by our door. It's resting by our door, and it's waiting. Now, you might think that when somebody is waiting on the other side of the door, it's an ambush. And it's just waiting to pounce upon you. And I have it sometimes, like I'm in my room, and I hear all kinds of like whispers and giggling on the other side of my door. And then I go and I open the door, and all of a sudden when I kick, I've been sitting on the edge of the door. So when I open the door, they all come flying in at me, and they burst into hysterical laughter. Right? So Rav Shach says that the Yetzirah is sitting on the other side of that door. And he's just waiting for an opportunity. He's waiting for that door to open up so he can fall inside. But he's not waiting there in an ambush. He's not waiting there in confrontation. He's sitting there peacefully and quietly. It's almost as if he's not here. We don't hear that giggling. We don't hear the murmuring on the other side of the door. He's sitting there and waiting. And why? Because Hashem created him for that purpose. Hashem created him for the purpose of being subjugated by us. So because the goal is for us to win over him and not for him to win over us, his nature is that he wants to be peaceful. So the Yetzirah is sitting by the door peacefully. That's the way he's supposed to be, like a docile cat. Just sitting there calmly and quietly. The problem is, if we don't control it, then he becomes our enemy, and then it becomes an ambush, and then it becomes an attack. So what is that? Inside of ourselves, we said these words, that we shouldn't be divided in our emotions and our thoughts and our feelings towards Hashem, because on one hand, we have a desire to be close to Hashem. On the other hand, though, we also have the desire to do things that we want to do which might not be in accordance to what Hashem wants. And that actually is what makes us distinct. That's what actually sets us apart from any other creation in the world. And that is our ability, well, first of all, that we have a Yetzirah and a Yetzirah, and the ability to be able to control our Yetzirah is something that only us humans have. And we are the only creation that has that. And that is why when it talks about the creation of Adam, the creation of man, and it says, and Hashem created man, it says, Vayitzer, and he created, and again, since we're doing double words today, double letters, Vayitzer, and he created, is written with two yods. Vayit, the prefix Vayit, in Hebrew, in the Chumash, means and he. So Vayitzer means anti-created. But Vayiyud Tzadi Reish, there's an extra yud there to tell us, and Rashi comments over there, that Hashem created us as if two. Because now we have two Yetzer. That other yud is for the Yatsar, created two parts of us, the Yetzahara and the Yetzer HaKod. And by us winning over our Yetzahara, then we are letting our Yetzer HaKod, our good inclination, rule over us. And then we actually are becoming deserving of the Nishama that was put inside of us, which comes from a holy place and wants to remain as holy as possible. So I guess that's today's theme, right? We have Levacha to Jesus, Vayisa to Yud. I guess that explains why everything, today was one of those days where I had to do everything twice. I went to work, and I had an appointment at home, discovered that I locked my keys in my car, had to come home, take care of my appointment at home, go get keys to my car, go back to work. Basically, everything was twice, right? The sheet that I'm giving out to you has mistakes. I have to do that twice. You know, I had an appointment today. They told me, no, it wasn't today. It was next week. They said, come back later. We'll squeeze you in. Everything was two. Two phases. You know, everything was two. So hopefully this year it's being recorded and you can listen to it two times. Okay. I didn't play that. Okay, so now there's a paper that I was looking into. It's called Paper Milo Tamidos. Milo Tamidos is a Muslim paper. And I don't know it very, very well, but I was looking through it because I figured Yei Sahara and Yei Shatov has to do with Amidos, and it has to do with our behaviors. So I looked inside and it said some interesting things about the Yei Sahara and Yei Shatov and how they were created, and different, I guess, personalities of the two. So let's look through some of those things. Number one, he tells us that the Yei Sahara and the Yei Shatov are from my Elyonos. They come from the heavenly places. They come from up above, they come from Hashem, they were created in a special, unique place that is both pure and is holy, a place where there is complete knowledge and understanding. Comes from Hashem. And it tells us also that when a person has the Yetzer Tov, it was created with their Neshama, and our job is to have that Yetzer Tov rule over us, that should be our ruling side, our inner conflict should be ruled by our Tov, our good side. And we should always be asking Hashem to help us to make the right decisions. If we have a choice to make and we're not sure or we're contemplating if something is right or not, we can down with Hashem, we can ask Hashem for guidance and to help us to make the right decision. Now there's also an expression that tells us that it's impossible for two kings to wear a crown at the same time. Meaning that there can only be one ruler. So if you have one leader, if you have one king, or you have one prime minister, or one president, you can't have two people ruling at one time. It doesn't work. There's only one person who's really in charge. When you have two in charge, everything falls apart. And that's what is also, they're applying here, Tarnay Sahara and Ayay Shatov. We can't have both ruling us at the same time. At any given time, only one can be our melech. Only one can be the one that we are ruled by, and it's up to us to make that decision about which one is ruled by and how we're going to let it rule us. And if he gives us a tip, he gives us a guide as to make sure that the Yetzer HaTov is the one that's ruling over us and not the Yetzer Hara. He tells us, if you think about some thoughts from Pirkei Avos, where Pirkei Avos tells us, remember where you came from, remember where you're going, and remember who's going to be asking you about what you did, and that will help you to try to do the right thing. And now we have something interesting. We have a few names and characteristics of the Yetzer HaTov. So in Sefer Milo Tamidos, he compares the Yetzer Hara to a fly, a pesky fly, that just seems to always be around, it's always buzzing, it's always around, and it's always waiting to stop, right? It's always waiting to stop. And I wouldn't use the word attack, but it's always there and ready to land and to gobble up and to take something. So the Yetzer Hara is there, he's around, he's a fly. He's, you know, like we always say, we want to be a fly on the wall because he's always observing and he's watching and he's trying to catch us at the right time. And we'll talk about that again soon. Sadr HaMelech describes the level of the Yetzer Hara. He says that you could be looking out your window, for example, and you could see somebody, a passerby, a homemaker, somebody who's walking by on the block. You don't know who that is. It's just a passerby. It's a stranger. It's somebody who's distant from you. You don't really have a connection with that person. So that's a further away. And then you have a person who is an oreya. An oreya is a guest. A guest is somebody that you have in your home. That you open the door, you let them in. You might not have a close relationship with them, but you do have some relationship if you're sitting with them and they're in your home and you've invited them in. So then it's a closer relationship. And then he tells us that once he started out as a passerby, a stranger on the street, we had no connection to him, we opened the door and we let him in, then at that point, it's up to him, and he can actually, up to us to prevent this from happening, but he actually becomes a balabai. He becomes like a real person in your home. He becomes like part of the family, if we let him. And that is why throughout history and through all different times, there are seven names that are used for the Yetzer Hara. And they're used at different times. I got this list from a book called Battle Plans. It's called Battle Plans, How to Fight the Yetzer Hara, by one of the authors of Rebbe Sipora Heller, and some of you have a Ziegler. So I actually was at a Shabbaton a few years ago. Somebody gave us a Bartola and she was quoting the book, and it sounded really, really nice. So actually a friend of mine, we both at the Shabbaton together. We bought the book and we used to call each other every Friday, and the goal was that we were supposed to learn the book together. So it started off okay. We learned, and then we chatted. And then as time went on, we chatted, and then we didn't have time to learn because we had to get ready for Shabbat for this Friday. So I found the book to be a very beautiful book, and that's why it's on your source sheet, so if you have time and you want to be able to read more into it, really the whole book itself was enough for a shiur. I could have given a whole shiur based on the book, or it would have taken longer. So I just picked and choose a few things there just to give you a little bit of a flavor. So there are seven names for the Yetzer Hara. And we can see those different explanations as to why those names are given. For now, we're just going to use the name. So Hashem calls the Yetzer Hara Ra. Like he's been saying, Kibo Yetzer Hara, that's the name that Hashem gave him. Moshe calls him Arel. An Arel is a person who does not have a Brisila, somebody who is uncircumcised. David HaMelech calls him Tameh, impure. Shlomo HaMelech calls him Oyev, our enemy. Yeshayahu, who was a Navi, who foreshadowed the destruction, he called him a Nixal, a stumbling block. Yehazkel, another prophet, who was actually ostracized and treated not so well by the Jewish people, he calls the Yetzer Hara an Evan, a stone. Yoel, who is one of the, is also a Navi, who's in the book Treyasar, the collection of Nevi'im, he calls him Tifoni, a viper. So we see from here these all different variations on a theme of somebody using different methods of getting you to be hurt and to cause you to stumble or cause you to fall. So that is really what his goal is. So how does the Yetzer Hara do that? How does he do that? He's not stupid, and we certainly are smart enough. If we have the Yetzer Hara and we have the Yetzer Tov, we have a brain, we have a mind, we certainly are intelligent. So what does the Yetzer Hara have to do? He has to use some kind of technique. He has to use some kind of a tactic to convince us, to somehow get us to do what he wants to do. So what we're going to see now, we're going to try and start with three explanations, three ideas, or three ways that the Satan, Yetzer Hara behaves, and then he's acted in the past, and who he's done to, and how he actually overcame them so that we could learn a lesson and apply it to ourselves of what we need to look out for. So let's take number one. The first person who sinned was Adam. Right? So Chava was given a mitzvah. She is not allowed to eat from the Eitz Hadas. This is the tree. It's Hashem's tree. You can't eat from it. She would never have gone near that tree. And she didn't. She was told she can, and she wouldn't. However, the Satan actually got her to do what she couldn't have done. Chava was brilliant. Chava was the first woman on earth. She was created by Hashem just moments before, hours before. How did he convince her? Because he convinced her that if you eat from the ancient Ra'as, you'll be like Hashem. How will she be like Hashem? Barnum tells us that if you eat from this tree, you will be very complete and perfect in knowledge. You'll know everything. Eitz Hadas, the tree of knowledge. You will have the knowledge like Hashem. She didn't use a tactic that says, come on, it's delicious, it really tastes very good, and convince her for her personal reasons, for her physical reasons, but rather he tried to explain to her why it was good for her to be like Hashem and that's a good thing. So we use the technique in convincing her that it was actually good for her, and it tells us, actually, that right before Chava ate from the tree, right before she listened to the Yetzirah, it says that she saw that the tree was good to eat from. She saw that the tree was good in its aroma, its smell, and its location. So there was a physical component to it, right? So we got her down from not doing anything for herself to only want to do something for Hashem that would be a mitzvah, and it would be desirous for her to do it, that in those intentions, she actually succumbed and had some aspect of physical pleasure in there. He knew he couldn't start with that. If he would have said, oh, I don't want to eat that food, it's really good, that wouldn't have helped. But what happened is, it was an intellectual tactic. It was a ploy. It was a means of the Yetzirah getting the Chava to do what she wanted. So what do we see from the Satan from here? What do we see from the Yetzirah from the Chava from here? That he doesn't hit us straight in the head. He knows that he can't just go head on with us to get us to rebel again, to get us to go against Hashem, or to get us to go against the Mitzvah. He knows that's not going to work. So he has to try something that's camouflaged. Right? Like a chameleon who changes his colors. Tells us like a wolf in a sheep's clothing. He tries to disguise what is being done as a mitzvah. Why it's so good that you're doing this. That you convince yourself that, hey, not only should I not be doing this, but I have to do this. It's the right thing to do. If Mama would have been told to eat from the tree for herself and her own selfish reasons, that wouldn't have worked. But because the Sultan was able to convince her that it was a mitzvah, that was a different story. So what is to be learned from here? We learn from here that when we have these decisions and we have choices to make, and sometimes we tell ourselves that maybe it's a mitzvah for us to do something that we know is wrong, but somehow we could convince us why it might be the right thing, then we really have to stop and think. That before we act, before we make that decision, to stop and think. Am I really making this decision because it's the right thing to do? Or is there some kind of, I guess I would say, some kind of a negia, some kind of, like there's some kind, something in it for me, like there's some benefit for me, why it would be good for me if I did this? We have to put that in the It's questioning us that if Adam, if Yetzirah was able to get Chava, who is on her level, we know, we talk about the Avos and the Imahos, we've had lessons about the greatness of the Avos and the Imahos, and certainly Adam and Chava, the very first human people, they were the closest people to Hashem, they were the only people. And if we were able to get them, and certainly, then we have to be as on our guard as well. Another example, Avram and Yitzchak. Avram, we know, got the command to go and to bring Yitzchak as a carbon, to bring Yitzchak as a sacrifice. And there's all kinds of stories in the Midrashim about what the Yetzirah, about what the Satan did to try to get Avram to change his mind and to go back home. One of the ones is that he turned himself into water and he caused there to be a big puddle in front of Avram that Avram had to walk through, like up to his neck. And no matter what the Yetzirah, and we'll use Yetzirah and Satan now synonymously, we'll use them as both together, tried to get him to do, Avram did not. He just kept on going. And when the Satan realized, okay, it's not working for Avram, let me try Yitzchak. I mean, after all, Avram's the one who's sacrificing Yitzchak, but Yitzchak is the one who has to get sacrificed. He's going to be the one that's tied down on that mizbeach. Let me try to stop him. I tried all kinds of tactics. And he tried one after another, and the Medrash goes through details, and it didn't work. Until he said one thing to Yitzchak that threw Yitzchak off his guard for a brief time, and that short amount of time was able to cause Yitzchak to hesitate for a second. What did the Yetzirah say to him? He said, you know, Yitzchak, your father is going to kill you. You're going to be offered as a sacrifice. And if you're offered as a sacrifice, you're not going to make it. And if you're no longer alive, then your brother Yishmael is going to get everything from your father that really should have been yours. And it was at that point, it was like that slight level on Yitzhak's part of, I'm going to lose everything. And so that subtleness, that little tiny detail, that little tiny drop of thought for a second that threw Yitzhak off was enough for him at that point to say to Abram, Father, where's the sheep that we're breeding as the carbon? You said we're breeding a sheep as a carbon. I don't see it. Meaning, is it me? Like, what's going on here? Like, I'm not. And that was just for a little bit of time. So what was the vulnerability that the Satan found in Yitzhak? A small degree of kinna, a small degree of jealousy for Yishmael. But what we have to understand is that when the Torah discusses the avos and the imahos, and it uses words that we know, such as jealousy, they're not being used in the context of the way we know it. So while we think of jealousy as purely selfish and wanting to have what somebody else has for purely physical and selfish reasons, when it comes to the avos, the Torah speaks in words that we can understand because we're human, and there's just no other word to say it. Right? It's like, it's saying jealousy, but it's not talking about the same levels of jealousy that we think of when we hear jealous. And I think that's a part of the answer to what you asked me last week about the brothers and Yosef. Okay? And we're going to discuss another kind of jealousy, and that I think will answer it even better. Okay? So this was, Yitzhak though was a kind person. He was not selfish, but it was a momentary flight. So again, what we need to watch out for is this Yetzer Hara. He's going to attack us where we're vulnerable and when we're vulnerable. He's going to be on the lookout to try to find that space where he can enter, right? Like the fly that enters, like that passerby who becomes a guest in our house, who becomes almost like part of the family. He knows us too well, and he's always looking for those ways to get to know us even better. So while we're on the topic of kinna, of jealousy, we're going to discuss a different kind of kinna, a different kind of jealousy that also can get in the way of our serving Hashem properly. Believe it or not, it's really a jealousy that is supposed to be good, but the Yetzer Hara, we're going to see, can actually convince us, and it could be used in a negative way. And that is the story of Rachel and Leah. Rachel and Leah, we spoke about also last week, Rachel and Leah, Rachel had no children at the time. Leah had a house full of children, and Rachel desperately wanted children. She was, and the context tells us that she was jealous of her sister. So again, when the Torah uses jealous, you have to be careful, because the Torah is magnifying and it's bringing to light something so that we can understand it better. The same way, I remember like one of my first exposures to a microscope in elementary school was that we had to bring in a New York Times. The New York Times is still in print or it's only online now, I don't even know, right? So the New York Times, the font, was really, really teeny. So we had to bring in the New York Times, and we had to cut out the letter E. And so one little letter E, I don't know, it could be like a 6-point font, it's tiny. And then we had to tape that onto a piece of paper, and then we each got a microscope, and we put the E under the paper, and we practiced using the different screens and the different of the levels of magnification on this E to see how this 6-point font E could become so big. Because we're trying to bring out a point, and we're trying to examine it and look at it much closely. So the Torah will use humanistic terminologies for human people who were on an almost not human level. We do have to understand that they were human, they did have human qualities, and they did work on themselves as humans, but in talking about a whole different league than what we can understand. So the Chachamim tell us that when Rachel was jealous of Leah, it wasn't just the fact that Leah had children and she did not, and she wanted to have something and she didn't want Leah to have it. What she was jealous of is an expression called kinas sofrin. Kinas sofrin is competitiveness between people for spiritual growth. So kinas is that jealousy, and sofrin, like the word sofer or sefer, like a holy book. So it's a certain competition between a person who wants to better themselves to be like another person who's great. Okay? Because they're jealous of what the other person has accomplished. So you can use that in the classroom also. Sometimes I find, especially with girls, I know so much about boys, but in the girls' classroom, there's very often competition. You got an 80 on your test? Oh, I only got an 89. Oh, I got a 95. Well, I got a 96. And it might look like Hinnah Sofer because she wanted to know more answers on the quiz. I'm not so sure we're up to that point, right? I don't know if 13-year-old girls are dying to make sure that they got all the answers right on their test, or as much as I got higher than you. So true Hinnah Sofer is where you don't care if the person has what they have, and you definitely don't want them to lose what they have, but if they've earned something because of their hard work, because of their struggle, because of their knowledge and their growth, then I want to do that also, and I want to grow, and I want to reach the level that they're at. So what Rachel was jealous of was the level that Leah was able to work on herself to reach to enable for her to be worthy of having all those children that Rachel didn't have. Okay? Now, the issue is, though, if we look in the pasuk, it tells us that at one point, Rachel says, I can't take this anymore. The pain is just too great. The suffering is unbearable, and I can't take it anymore. So at that point, we have to stop and think, and we have to stop and ask. This is brought down in the Pinnacle of Creation. He tells us that we have to stop and think, because then if the situation has become unbearable for her, then that means it's a physical kina. Then it's changed context already, that for that minute, we're not dealing with that power for spiritual growth, but rather really, I don't have something that I want. So how do we recognize that? How do we reconcile that? So it tells us that at that point, the Yetzer Hara switched sides. The Yetzer Hara has all kinds of tactics, we said. He'll do all kinds of things and he will stoop to nothing. So the Yetzer Hara at times will go in front of us to obstruct us and to prevent us from going further, and at the same time growing, right? There's a Freudian slip. He wants us to not go further so we don't grow, and he goes in front of us. But on the other hand, sometimes he pushes us from behind. And what does that mean? We say in davening to remove haser hasatan, remove the satan from before us and from behind us. We daven for Hashem to help us in dealing with the Yetzer and the Satan, whether he's in front of us or whether he's behind us. So there are two explanations as to the behind us part. So in continuing with our theme right now, the behind us means like when a person is on a horse and they're beating the horse to go faster and faster and faster and hurry and more and more and more and more and more until the horse collapses because it's gone too hard and it's gone and done too much. The Yetzer Hara sometimes will get us to be, yeah, yeah, more, 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 more mitzvah, more, more, work harder, more, 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 until we collapse. And it's not healthy either. Right? It's not healthy either. There has to be a happy medium. We should strive to do mitzvah, but we can only be pushed so far, and we can only do so much that it becomes not normal, and becomes unbearable. We can't do it anymore. You know, I might have said this story before. I remember that I had a girl in my class in grade 8. And she was going through the phase where she was found to be a very good girl. Maybe it was ninth grade, because we were taking the city bus, right? It was ninth grade, and we were taking the city bus, and we would be standing on line to get on the bus. And me and my friends and her were all on line, and of course there's other people, some in front of us, some behind us, people going home from work, whatever the story is. And there was someone in front of us, she said, it's okay, you can go. And then the next person came, it's okay, you can go. It's okay, you can go. And before you know it, the bus was filled up and there was no room for her left on the bus and the bus was waiting without her. Is that a mitzvah? That's the satan, right? That's already at that point, it's the satan. Yeah. Telling you, let her go in front of you, let her go in front of you, let her go in front of you. you know, the stuff can come from behind us and push us. Yeah, more, more. Why don't you go from here? You should stay there all night long. You are such a sad Asian. You're a really good girl. You let her go in front of you. Right? So that's the sucker. That's the sucker trying to convince you that the more people, the more you do, the better you are, the more righteous you are. Another explanation for from before us and from after us while we're on the topic is that sometimes we'll do a mitzvah, we'll do something which is right, and it might have been hard for us, and we might have struggled with it, and we worked hard, and we did it, and we feel accomplished, but then after we unravel, and after we get upset, right? Let's say, offer to take somebody shopping, right? We offer to take somebody shopping. And you think, okay, I'm going to Loblaws, she's going to Loblaws, what's the big deal? I'm going anyways, I'll pick her up and we'll go in the car. And you think, okay, how long will it take? An hour? Okay, so you block off an hour of your time to help this person out, you take them to the store, and it ends up taking 2 hours. And the whole time you're sitting there, being very calm, being very patient, no, I'm going to do this right. Okay, I'm not going to say anything. I didn't realize she was such a slow shopper. I didn't realize she was going to examine every can of tomato sauce. Okay, and now she's talking to the cash lady. Okay, I can do this. And then you get home, and then you're searching around. Oh, my God, my friend, you have to do it. Someone's not there. That's the Sahara Acharenu after we did the mitzvah. Okay, so sometimes the satan is before us, trying to stop us. Sometimes behind us, making us regret that we did the mitzvah, and sometimes he's behind us, forcing us to do more and more and more and more, and we have to use our thinking, we have to use our common sense, and if we're not sure, yeah, is this what I'm supposed to be doing now? Am I really supposed to be, you know, diving for 6 hours? Am I supposed to be doing this for this amount of time? If it starts to be a little bit not as regular, then it's a good time to check it out. What are we going to do with this Yom Sahara? We have him in front of us and behind us, so what do we do with him? Two tactics. Tactic number one. Come from an example of Parshas Terumah. In Parshas Terumah, Terumah means the donation, to give tactics about tzedakah. There's different mitzvahs of tzedakah in that parsha, and there's actually positive and negative mitzvahs that apply to tzedakah. There's a positive mitzvah to give tzedakah, and there's a negative mitzvah of not pretending that we didn't see someone who needed tzedakah. Not to turn away our eyes from someone who truly needs tzedakah. And again, we're not going to discuss now what that means. That would probably fall into the other category of, you know, knowing when we should do different things. Okay? So the Rabbeinu Bachaya says that our natural instinct, a natural human tendency would be to not want to give tzedakah. Right? Because we have something, we work hard for it, it's hard-earned money, it would be hard for us, from a natural humanistic perspective, to give it away. And he tells us, though, that would be our natural humanistic emotion, but our wisdom, like our sikha, our knowledge, and our mind, understands where it's coming from and knows why we should. So we have this, again, inner conflict in between us, amongst our own self, of it's my money, I worked hard for it, should I give it away? Versus my mind telling me, he has nothing, he is hungry, he needs something, help him out. And we're not sure. So what do we have though? The pasuk tells us, in the verse where it tells us to give tzedakah, the pasuk tells us you will not lose out from giving tzedakah. Not only will you not lose out, but you will also gain. So that is a promise, that's a haftacha, a promise from Hashem, telling us, and even it says, asher, this real says his asher, that if you give tzedakah, if you give maaser, if you give one-tenth of your earnings, then you will his asher. It's a play on words. You will get asher. You will get rich. So give to get. And that is what the pasuk says. Now, of course, the pasuk is divine words from Hashem, so we can definitely understand that, and we can definitely hear that that is a promise. But if that, in case that wasn't enough for us, in Mishlei, Shlomo HaMelech also refers to this, And he tells us the same concept, that you will not lose by giving tzedakah. And also the Shulchan Aruch, where it talks about the laws of tzedakah, also reminds us, don't worry, by giving tzedakah, you will not lose out. Why do we need all three of these to tell us this? Why do we need so many reminders from so many places to do this? It sounds almost like a trick. It sounds like we're convincing ourselves to do something, and maybe if we're serving Hashem, we shouldn't need to convince ourselves, we should just be doing it. Maybe if we just gave tzedakah without convincing ourselves, maybe that would be a higher level than saying, just give it, it's okay, Hashem will pay you back. Maybe that seems like it's not as good of a level of giving the tzedakah, of doing the mitzvah. So the Mefarshim tell us that people, us humans, are compared to an elephant trainer. And compared to an elephant trainer, because we are the trainer, and the Yetzer Hara is our elephant. Why? Because the elephant is a huge beast. It has no common sense. So what the trainer has to do, this small, smart man, who is definitely more weak and not as strong as the elephant, has to find a way to control this elephant. He has to use some way to convince this beast to behave as he does. And if you go to the circus and you see these elephants marching, and then they loop their tails to the trunks, and then they lay down and they start playing Graham's Lullaby, which sounds like Hamalaha Goel, and all the elephants are attached and they're going to sleep. How did he get him to do that? He had to use some kind of seichel, some kind of common sense to do that. The problem is, if he forces them too much, the elephants can rebel and crush him. Right? Hanukkah's coming. You know about the people in the story of Hanukkah. They use elephants, and people were crushed by those elephants. They're heavy. But if he uses his wisdom, if he finds some kind of way to train him and outsmart him, then it'll be very successful. Those elephants can do all those kinds of tricks if you know just what to do. So, too, Chazal tells us, if we force ourselves to give tzedakah, when we don't really want to, it's going to be begrudging. We're not going to want to do it. It's not going to be coming from the right place. And we missed the point. We were crushed. We toppled. Right? Because we're going to be doing it begrudgingly, and we're going to have a negative attitude towards it. That's not tzedakah. So what do we have to do? We could convince ourselves, it's okay. Don't worry. You can give that. And the Chazal call it, you know, like there's an expression, throwing the animal a bone. Right, to give them a treat, you know, like everyone, like when you want your puppy to behave and there's a little treat for them, or the seals, like when they balance the ball on their nose, you get a treat. It's okay. So let's just give ourselves the quote-unquote a little treat, so that the Yetzer Hara stays quiet, we quiet him down, and we say to quiet Yetzer Hara, it's okay, I can do this because I'm going to pay back for it. I'm not going to lose out. Keep quiet Yetzer Hara, don't bother me. And it tells us that we are allowed to use arguments like that to neutralize the Yetzer Hara and to keep him at bay so that we want to, so we can do the things that we want to do to serve Hashem properly. And with our final conclusion, we have also from Battle Plans, she actually does have Battle Plans. She gives us a whole bunch of lessons and a whole bunch of techniques and ideas that we can use to fight against the Yetzer Hara. So what I'm quoting to you now, what I'm sharing with you now, is Battle Plan number 11. Okay, I found this one very interesting. It tells us that the Yetzer Hara has room to enter when there's room to enter. What does that mean? That means that sometimes you're driving and you see, or you get on the highway and you're traveling very far and you realize that it's getting too late or too dark or the weather's bad and you're tired, you want to stop. So you're driving, you get off the exit and you're looking at the highways, you're looking at these motels, and some of them have a sign that says vacancy, and some of them will have a sign that says no vacancy. So vacancy obviously means you can actually park your car in the parking lot and go in and hopefully get a decent room. No vacancy, no room. Can't come in. So basically what the Yetzer Hara tries to do is to find vacancies. When there's a vacancy, when there's an emptiness, or when there's a vacuum or a void, it's an empty space. It has to be filled with something. So if we don't fill it with something, the Yetzer Hara is going to fill it with something. And he can come in and use that open room. He can use that motel room inside of our heart, inside of our mind, to use that time to convince us to do things that maybe we wouldn't have normally done, or to think of ways to get us to listen to him. So how do we do that? You know, I mean, what does that mean? So her technique, her tactic is telling us that we should, I know we're all so busy, so like I'm reading this, I'm like, really? Like I'm telling busy people that they shouldn't have empty time in their life? We'd be so lucky, right? Some days we're like, I wish I had some free time. So what she says, and she actually makes the differentiation between the expression free time, and I want to make sure I get the expression right, and productive leisure time. Okay? So free time would be that empty time of doing nothing or doing something thoughtless and mindless that just, you know, a waste of time. But productive leisure time, she says, is good. We all need, I guess, what we call downtime, right? We all need to have something that we do that makes us feel good, whether physically, spiritually, emotionally, psychologically. Like, we can all think of things that we do to give ourselves a little boost when we need it most, whether we like to read, we like to bake. I'll tell you, those first couple of weeks after my mother passed away, I loved to bake, and I just baked, and I baked, and I baked, and I baked, and I baked. Thank goodness I just said, okay, my purpose wasn't to eat it, right? So I stuck it all in the freezer.
Yeah.
So we'll have to take it out one day and serve it for lots of desserts on Shabbos or something. Mm-hmm. Definitely for something. But I baked. And what did I do? Like, I went to Michael's. And I go to Michael's and I find a few little cute pasta, I don't know, some kind of cute little sprinkles, and I put it on the cake. Or I found, like, I like to do crafty things, like got scrap of paper. Whatever it is that you do to fill up those, that emptiness inside of you, but it makes you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
So again, so that is her technique of saying, okay, use that time, use that downtime, but when you're having that downtime, do things that will make you feel better and not make you feel worse, or leaving you feeling empty or worse inside. So hopefully now we can understand the inner conflict that's going on within us. We have that conflict, we have the ego, we have the ego. We all strive to do good. We all want to do good. And we have that little pesky fly who's like that elephant that needs to be trained. We have to keep him out and hang up the no vacancy sign so that our inner conflict becomes less and less. And the more we work on that, the more practice we get. I can't tell you that it's going to get easier, because it tells us that the greater the person is, the greater the Yetzer Hara. So I can't tell you it's going to get easier, but it will be practiced, and we will have trained well for the things that come our way. So I wish you all a good week, and hopefully the only thing you can do double is listen to the fear double, and hopefully after that tomorrow we do everything one at a time and find those leisure activities to fill us up and keep the Yetzer Hara at bay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
My favorite was before she played called Safari. Have you seen that?
I sound familiar, but I don't remember if I looked at it. It's Safari, right?
Yeah, but the thing is, it creates change.
Also, it has on it.
But it really brings it.
Yeah.
Is it S-E-F-A-R-I?
R-A.com?
I'm not sure if it's .com or .on.
Okay. It's not like I just typed in Safari at the
bottom.
What? It's fine.
Thank you.
I'm going to look into it.
Because
so then you can also create other firms that decide for me?
Yeah, there's everything. And people have created, the rabbis use, you know, I think it's been used, you know, as well. And, you know, people will, once you publish it for a class, you can, you know, other. You can make it, you know,
no,
people have created, like you've done, do it in different parts and different
aspects. Oh, okay. Also, sources, okay, so there are sources on it designed for...
Right, like they have all our stuff, and then you can look and, you know, you can... When I send you the thing, I'll look in the mail. Yeah. I'll go home and see my mom.
No,
I can't.
I can't.
Yeah, it's not that much, you know, but it's just a little bit, you know.